I am confident that the merest hint that I might tell her some juicy nugget about my story will have her tapping her nose like a ludicrous character in a Dick Francis novel and leave me to it. Of course, my story is not for Kelly. I doubt she'd have the capacity to understand what motivated me to do as I did. My story is just that, mine. Though I know readers would lap it up if I ever published it, not that I ever could. But it's nice to know that people would pore over it nonetheless. It would be a bestseller, and the masses would rush to the shops, hoping to know more about the attractive and tragic young woman who could commit such a terrible act. The tabloids have been running pieces on me for months now. The public doesn't seem to tire of the two-bit psychologists willing to diagnose me from a distance, or the occasional contrarian who will defend my actions to outrage on Twitter. The general public are so enthralled by my actions that they are even willing to watch a hastily cobbled-together Channel 5 documentary about me, which included a fat astronomer explaining that my star sign predicted my case. He got my star sign wrong. So I know that people would fall on my words. Without any attempt on my part at an accurate explanation, my case has already become a notorious one. And ironically, that is without anyone knowing about my real crimes. The justice system in this country is a joke, and there is nothing which illustrates that more than this one sentence. I have killed several people, some brutally, others calmly, and yet I currently languish in jail for a murder I did not commit. The crimes I did orchestrate, if known about, would ensure that I was remembered for decades, perhaps even centuries, if the human race manages to hold on for that long. Dr. Crippen, Fred West, Ted Bundy, Lizzie Borden, and me, Grace Bernard. Actually, that displeases me somewhat. I'm not an amateur or an imbecile. I'm someone who, if you saw me on the street, you'd gaze at admiringly. Perhaps that's why Kelly clings to me instead of punching the living daylights out of me as I expected. Even in here, I retain a certain elegance and a froideur that those weaker than I desperately wish to break through. Despite my crimes, I'm told I've received letters by the sackful, professing love, admiration, asking me where I bought the dress I wore on the first day of my trial. Roxanda, if you're interested. That terrible Prime Minister's wife wore something very similar just a month later, unfortunately. Often hate mail. Sometimes mad shit, where the writer thinks I've been sending them messages through the air. People seem to really wish to know me, to impress me, to emulate me. If not in my actions, then at least in my sartorial choices. It matters not, since I don't ever read any of it. My lawyer scoops it all up and takes it away. I've no interest, really, in what I represent to strangers sad enough to put pen to paper and write to me. Perhaps I'm being too kind to the general public, ascribing to them a more complex set of emotions than they deserve. Maybe the reason for such sustained and frenzied interest in my case is best ascribed to Occam's razor, the theory that the simplest answer is usually the correct one. In which case, my name will live on long after I am dead for the most prosaic reason of all, merely because the idea of a love triangle seems so dramatic and grubby. But when I think about what I actually did, I feel somewhat sad that nobody will ever know about the complex operation that I undertook. Getting away with it is highly preferable, of course, but perhaps when I'm long gone, someone will open an old safe and find this confession. The public would reel. After all, almost nobody else in the world can possibly understand how someone, by the tender age of 28, can have calmly killed 6 members of her family, and then happily carried on with the rest of her life, never to regret a thing. Chapter 1. I step off the plane and encounter that glorious blast of hot air that British people always dramatically exclaim at when they land somewhere hot and remember that much of the rest of the world enjoys a climate which doesn't just veer between grey and cold. I'm adept at moving through airports quickly, and today that's especially true, since I'm keen to avoid the man I had the misfortune of sitting next to during the flight. Amir introduced himself the moment I'd finished putting my seatbelt on. A guy in his mid-30s, he was wearing a shirt which was stretched desperately over his almost comical pectoral muscles, and he'd inexplicably paired it with shiny tracksuit bottoms. The worst part of his outfit, the cherry on the whole mess, was the pair of sliders he had on instead of shoes. Gucci pool shoes with matching socks. Jesus. I considered asking the hostess if I could sit somewhere else, but she...